These are the stories that you need to know about today. Boy, there's a lot going on again. There is much more escalation. A U.S. submarine shoots down an Iranian ship. It's 2,000 miles away from the fighting. Also this, what's going to happen with the Saudis now? What are they going to do? Are they going to join the fight? And if they join the fight, is it against Iran? Is it against Israel? Against who? And what happens to oil production? That's an important question that everybody in the world who uses gasoline is going to want to know the answer to. I'm going to talk to a Saudi representative coming up. Also, what's Russia going to do? Are they going to continue backing Iran, and how much? I'm going to talk to a Russian spokeswoman of foreign affairs right here on the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, every day, this war seems to escalate even more and more. And here's the very latest. Iran is furious right now, furious with the United States for sinking one of its military ships that was far removed, by the way, from the Persian Gulf and this theater of war as we've been describing it to you. Now, this happened off the coast of Sri Lanka in the Indian Ocean. Here's some video that's been released by the U.S. government. You could see it there. That's a telescope. Remember when we used to watch those World War II movies about the Russian submarines and the U.S. submarines? And yeah, that's a submarine taking these pictures. Apparently, some 86 bodies have already been recovered. They just blew the ship up in the open waters, blew it to smithereens. 86 sailors are dead. This is the first time that this kind of thing has happened since World War II. And is it significant? Well, of course it is, because the ship, it in and of itself, had nothing to do with the war in the Gulf. It was there at the behest of the Indian Navy, as a matter of fact. And Iran has put out a notice immediately after this happened. Here's what Foreign Minister Arachi is saying.
The U.S. has perpetrated an atrocity at sea, 2,000 miles away from Iran's shores. Frigate Dena, a guest of India's Navy, carrying almost 130 sailors, was struck in international waters without warning. Mark my words, the U.S. will come to bitterly regret precedent it has set.
You know, what's interesting about this is that Mr. Arachi's threat is focusing on the location of the frigate, right? 2,000 miles away, you heard him say, working alongside India's Navy. Well, that's important. By the way, not long after he said that, Iran's Revolutionary Guard said it had struck a U.S. oil tanker in the Persian Gulf. It happened earlier today, just a few hours ago, really. Now, is it retribution? Will other U.S. tankers now be targeted? I mean, can you say escalation continuing? I mean, by the way, this is happening as there are reports that Israel is doing what it can to escalate the war. It wants the Gulf states like Qatar and the Saudis, for example, to join in this war. And this is one of the topics that we're going to be talking about as well. But I want to show you something else right now, because I think this is one of the most fascinating videos, and at least it's being seen that way by people all over the world. It's making the rounds in the United States. It might be what you call, I don't know, a viral video, I guess. What you're about to see here is a U.S. Marine. He's sharing a sentiment that is felt by a lot of Americans. A lot of Americans think that this is a BS war. They don't want their government involved in this war. 70-80% of the people are still against it. They're asking, why are we fighting a war for Israel? That's what people in the United States are asking. Why are we fighting another war for Israel? And that's what this Marine is asking as he screams it in this courtroom. Watch.
Ow. No one wants to fight for Israel!
His hand! Oh! His hand!
It's tough to watch. That's a U.S. Marine. He's in a screaming all of a sudden like other people are. There are protests in the United States, in many cities that we've been watching about this. People asking the same question that he is, by the way. So let's look at the big picture here. Why are we in this situation? And it's really pretty simple. The United States runs the world. The United States has run the world since the end of World War II. That's what we like to call a unipolar situation, right? It's a unipolar global world right now by the United States. But here's the problem for the United States, or for others in the United States who are prolonging this, because it's not the people of America. That's no longer the case. Unipolar is no longer the case. Ever since China was allowed, for example, in the WTA, the world has changed significantly. It's not just China. So does the United States say, okay, we're going to work with those other powers. We'll work with Russia. We'll work with China, right? Do they say that? No, that's not what they're saying. That's not what the power brokers inside the United States are saying. What they're saying is, no, no, we're not willing to give up any of our power. We want it all. We want to keep it all. China, Russia, forget about it. We're not going to let you be anywhere near the level that we are. And all these other proxies, which is what Iran is right now, it's a proxy in a war between the United States, Russia, and China. That's what's really going on. But still, there's Iran, there's Latin America, there's Africa, there's the Middle East. They all need to submit. This is what the administrative state, what the neocons, what the power brokers who are in the president's head are telling them. The system that we set up after World War II, that's our system. The world's rules, we made those rules. They're our rules, right? And to prove just how powerful we are, we will now weaponize those things. We're going to weaponize banking. We're going to weaponize currency. We're going to weaponize regulations and markets and energy and trade and tariffs and sanctions. And you know who's going to help us do this? Used to be Europe. Now, just mostly Israel. We're going to do this with Israel. And yeah, some European countries. So this is really what's happening here. This is what this whole Iran thing is really all about. Don't let them fool you. Don't let them fool you. And this has been, by the way, happening for years now. But now it's much more out in the open. That's why this Marine and other people are talking about this. In fact, here, I'm going to show you the poster boy for this type of thinking. The poster boy for this kind of thinking. His name is Senator Lindsey Graham, literally saying what I just said, but he says it, well, he says the quiet part out loud. He basically is saying, look, we have to kill all the Muslims. Yeah, we've got to kill the Muslims. Now, I'm going to play a rant of his that just happened. You might find this rant to be both stupid and bigoted, and you would be right to say that. But as they say, here in journalism, we just play the hits. It is what it is.
This is a religious war. Who wins it at the end of the day? Do the radical Islamic terrorists who want to kill all the Jews because God told them to? Who want to kill me because I'm an infidel? Who want to purify Islam?
Did you see his eyes, his complexion, his face? More on that in a minute. But did you notice something else? You notice he says they want to kill the Jews. What he really means is Israel. He's framing this as a war for Israel, right? This is all about Israel. Israel hates Muslims, and for security reasons, it wants to break up all those countries that have Muslims. It already did so in Iraq and Libya and Syria. Now it wants to do the same thing in Iran. That's what's happening. But he can't say that. He can't say Israel wants to break up the Middle East and break up all these Muslim countries. So instead, he turns it around. He turns it into all Muslims want to kill us. He doesn't even say Israel. He says all Muslims want to kill us. In other words, Americans. That Muslims want to kill Americans, are a threat to America. They want to kill us. Really? They want to kill us? When? How? And the best question maybe here of all is, who attacked who? Who attacked who? Also, notice how he describes the people of the Muslim faith and the people who live in the Middle East countries. Calls them radical Islamic terrorists. How incredibly bigoted is that? Who talks like that? How do you call yourself a man of God, a Christian, you know? Or any kind of religion, and say that about other human beings, all of them, right? You know what he sounds like? He sounds like McCarthy. I don't know if you guys know the history of the United States, my country, but there was a guy named Joe McCarthy, which is really another word for crazy in the United States. Crazy and radical and racist, right? Senator Joseph McCarthy was really a hateful guy. So it happened in the 1950s. He was a drunk. And he went around scaring all Americans with the sky is falling, right? They're coming to get us. Everybody's a communist. They're all Russian spies. Your neighbor's a Russian spy, and the guy who does the news is a Russian spy, and the guy who works with you is a Russian spy, and your wife might be a Russian spy. And people were committing suicide. People were losing their jobs. I mean, that's what this guy believed. Thank God at the time, these people were not fed by institutions and they weren't given money. He was just kind of rogue, right? I'm going to show you something now to make the comparison, to put the whole picture together. I want to show you Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham recently has been appearing on a lot of television shows and newscasts, right? And you notice what I told you a little while ago? If you notice when you saw him a little while ago, his face was all kind of ruddy and looks kind of rough all the time. Well, here he is just recently appearing on Fox and all these other stations. And I'm sorry, but he's drunk as a skunk. Watch.
I want sanctuary city policy to end. You're committing a crime and you should go to jail. Let's stand behind a fair investigation. Do we want to be a country that eliminates sanctuary cities as a Republican Party? Hell yeah. We got to give them a chance to see the difference between us and liberal Democrats.
What we're going to do is, well, I'm not going to agree. That would grind it to a halt. You couldn't deal with mass. We're not dealing with the
sanctuary states.
Yeah, sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Under existing law that, of the United States. Okay, who's Kim Davis, folks? Nothing to do with illegal immigration. They have people who are illegal immigrants. I was asked, what about it? Well, I agree with her political, philosophical, not her religious views. I think it's a defining moment in his presidency. Ronald Reagan went to the Berlin Wall and he said, tear down this wall. He didn't say, could you make it lower? Mr. President, you can do it. I hope you will do it. And if you do it, this is Reagan bless.
Joining us now, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. Senator, we just found out today, why don't we mobilize our military? Why don't we get military equipment in there?
You know, I'm just sitting here. I was trying to write down and count all the words that he either mispronounced or slurred. I mean, he's on television. So there you have it. I mean, Lindsey Graham, crazy, drunk in public. He's supposedly, as we know, the worst kept secret. And you know, I feel bad for the guy, you know? I mean, apparently he's gay, I guess. That's the story that's reported all over Washington, but he can't admit it, so he has to keep it inside of him, and maybe that causes whatever it is that this is that we're watching with him. But that's that guy that you just saw right there, right? Joe McCarthy, right? That's the number one defender of Israel in the United States. The number one defender of U.S. wars, more wars, more wars, kill, kill. Attack, invade, right? That's the guy. That's the guy you just saw right there. I mean, dangerous? I think so. But only if he can convince the president of the United States, right? Mr. Trump and others, because by the way, it's not just Trump. Other presidents have fallen for this crap as well. If he can convince the president of the United States that all this crazy stuff that he's saying, you know, after I don't know what he's done, is true, then it's dangerous. Then it's a problem. But here's the problem. On top of the problem, he apparently has convinced Donald Trump of all this crazy talk that he just said. Trump has given Lindsey Graham, you know, exactly what Lindsey Graham has asked for, which is essentially to, you know, go after Israel, right? To all over Washington, exactly what he and Israel wanted. So a religious war. Now, does Trump understand what he's done? Does Trump even know what he's done here? Listen to Scott Ritter.
Does he not understand that Ali Khamenei volunteered to die on the first day of the war? Ali Khamenei was at home in his residence, knowing he was being hunted down by the United States, knowing he was being targeted by death. He was surrounded by fellow Shahids who also knew that they were going to die, but they also understood that there was a purpose in their death, because by dying, they entered into martyrdom. And the Iranian people are in the streets, but they're not shouting death to Khamenei. They're shouting long live the martyr Khamenei. That's why we lost the war on day one. This was a trap set by the Iranians on day one by people of faith. Donald Trump wouldn't even know what a Shia is or what a 12er is. He doesn't know who Hussein is. He doesn't know who Ali is. He has no clue what the Battle of Karbala is. And yet he fell into a trap where all of this is relevant. He assassinated or facilitated the murder of the second most important man in the Shia faith, Ali Khamenei. This is the equivalent of killing the Pope if you're Catholic, killing the Archbishop of Canterbury if you're British, killing the head of the Orthodox Church, Kirill, if you are Russian. And Donald Trump doesn't understand this. If the purpose of this operation was to get the Iranian people in the street, Donald Trump succeeded. But he got the wrong people in the street for the wrong cause. The people of Iran today are rallying in support of the Islamic Republic. The Islamic Republic is invincible at this moment, because you can't kill people who are ready to die for their cause. And the Shia of Iran, who are defending the Islamic Republic, are prepared to a man, to a woman, to become martyrs in the cause of their faith.
You know, if President Trump wanted Iranians to topple their government, he's taken absolutely the wrong strategy. Let's talk about who he's really angered here. You just heard Scott say it, you know? I talk to Scott a lot. I think he's a really smart guy and a courageous guy, by the way. Speaking of Marines, he's a Marine. Who Mr. Trump has really angered and escalated this war, the Shias. And who are the Shias, right? Because in America, we think, okay, Shias, Sunnis, who are these people? Shia Muslims are concentrated primarily in the Middle East and in South Asia. Some of the highest concentrations, for example, in Iran, up to 95%. These are like 200-300 million people. In Azerbaijan, they're like almost 85%. Bahrain. Now you know why the other day we showed you the video of the people at Bahrain celebrating when the installations were being hit, the U.S. installations. They make up like 72% of the people in Bahrain. 72. Iraq, up to 65%. You know, these numbers are variable. And by the way, there are huge numbers, the Shias, in Yemen. Huh, Yemen? Lebanon, what's going on there? Pakistan, what did we show you yesterday that was going on there? Afghanistan, they also have substantial communities of Shias in India, in Kuwait, and in Saudi Arabia. So what we are seeing is a war that is spiraling in many ways, with Shias now attacking the U.S. and Israeli installations. The Israelis love it. They think it's great because they want to unsettle, create this hornet's nest in the Middle East. They've wanted to do this forever. But that's not what the United States wants. That's not what the Americans want. That's not even what Donald Trump wants. In fact, but look at the scenes. This is not what they wanted, but this is what they're getting. Look at these scenes. These are Shias all over different countries in the United States, attacking U.S. embassies and celebrating Iran military wins. Where? The countries I just mentioned. Pakistan, Bahrain, Lebanon. Oh, yeah, Yemen. Speaking of Yemen, here's the very latest on that front. So yesterday, we told you about a Qatari expert in Doha, and he explained to us here on the air the tough spot that the Gulf countries find themselves in. Think about the situation they're in. They're in cahoots with the U.S. military because they have U.S. military installations, and they're in cahoots with the United States economically. But they fundamentally agree with Iran, even though Iran is kind of attacking them or their country. And at the same time, they can't stand Israel. So what do they do? Do they fight back against Iran or not? Well, Yemen just made it even more difficult for them if they choose to do that. Because Yemen just announced that if the Gulf states attack Iran, they, Yemen, will attack the Gulf states and hit all of those military and energy installations in those countries. In fact, I'll read you what Iran's state broadcaster, IRIB, said. They're saying Yemen has warned several Arab states in the region in recent days that if, in fact, they join a war against Iran, they, Yemen, will enter the conflict on Iran's behalf and target the critical energy infrastructure in the Gulf states. That's a direct quote. So, wow. Joining us now to talk about this from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, is Khalid Batarfi. He is a professor at Faisal University, and we thank him for taking time to join us and to talk about this. Maybe that's where we should start this conversation. The fact that a lot of people are wondering, what are Qatar, what are Saudi Arabia going to do? Are they going to attack Iran? Even though they have serious questions and problems with Israel, maybe even bigger than their problems with Iran? And are they going to turn on the United States while the United States is attacking Iran? This is a very difficult question. How do you figure this out, Professor? What do you do if you're a Saudi? Well,
Prince Turki Faisal put it on CNN very clearly that we have three challenges in the region. The first challenge is the ideological Iran, the far right in Iran, who would want to burn the whole region to start it for al-Mahdi al-Muntadhar, who disappeared, the Imam who disappeared 700 years ago, and he cannot come until it's all on fire. Mm. So they are doing that, exactly that. And Israel is doing the opposite. But the same way, they are waiting for Messiah to come and then lead them to conquer the world. And the only way to do that is, again, to burn the region out. And then we have the Anglican Protestants, the Anglican Christians in America, who believe the same way, but they are waiting for Jesus to come and lead them against the Jews and against the Arabs and everyone else, so they will be either Christians or die. So these three mad people are running the show now, and they are turning against all Arabs and Muslims in the region to burn their countries and to make them into hell, chaos, and that's what we are. That's what is happening today. That the three collides in the region, and we have to live in that fire and defend ourselves.
I take it. What you're saying is those people, the crazies, the mad people, as you call them, who may believe in God. I believe in God. I believe you believe in God. But there's a difference between believing in God and believing in stories where the world has to end and everybody has to die, because somehow that's really what God wants. I don't believe that's what God wants. I don't think you believe that's what God wants. But you're saying to pacify those people, you may have, those people want you to attack Israel and the United States, I bet, right?
Yeah, each party wants us to join his forces, even though we know that he wants to destroy us. How funny is that? I mean, it's a very hectic situation. Now, the Iranians say that we didn't attack you. Who then did attack us? Well, we found that some of Iran's militias in Iraq maybe are the ones who are responsible for attacking us. Israel, of course, wants us to join them. But we prefer to be neutral at the moment, because those all are our enemies. I mean, these forces are dark forces, and we don't want to join anyone of them. We want just to defend ourselves and continue our vision 2030 for rebuilding our country.
So I want to make sure I understand you clearly, because this will be followed and written about all over the world probably after we're done with this interview, since we're already being seen by millions and millions of people. You're on the record here saying, not as an official from the government, but from someone who has an important voice in Saudi Arabia, that you do not believe Saudi Arabia will be attacking or going to war with Iran. Is that correct?
That's correct. We reserve our right to respond to attacks, but we try to constrain ourselves not to do this right or to make this right valid, because we prefer to stay on the lines and stay out of trouble, out of this fire as much as possible.
Can I ask you a question about, you know, one of the distinguishing features of your country is it is probably, from the standpoint of energy, one of the most important countries in the world, if not the most important country in the world. Given what's going on right now with the Strait of Hormuz closed, with today we learned several tankers were set ablaze in the Persian Gulf, how long do you think before Saudi Arabia will have to cut production based on this situation?
Well, I don't know how long, but I know that we have a pipeline from east to west, and right now it's in full capacity. So the oil are being exported from Yanbu on the Red Sea, whether to Asia or to Europe. And then we have been preparing for this day by having ships carrying our oil in advance to our customers. Mm. But we are talking about 5 to 7 million barrels a day, safe from this situation.
So it's interesting what you said. You have some ships that are already out. It sounds like you guys thought, uh-oh, some trouble may be brewing. Let's make sure we get ahead of this. I imagine there's even a timeline for that, because those ships eventually are going to have to reach their destinations, disembark their oil, and then come back empty. You won't be able to resend them, right? So there probably will be an effect on oil in some way, including Saudi oil from Aramco, I imagine, right? When?
Of course.
Yeah. Can you characterize it for us?
Well, my personal estimate is a few months.
That you can go at least a few months before the situation gets to the point where production will be affected. Let me ask you a question about oil prices in general. Do you think we're going to see oil prices go up? Because I just checked before you and I started this interview, and I was surprised to see that the price of oil has actually gone down. What gives?
Because of preparation. We prepared for this, and other Gulf countries prepared for this in advance. There are many ships are waiting outside of these areas for customers. They are not being sent. They are just waiting for future export. And also the Emirates they have another pipeline going south of Hormuz Strait to Al Fujairah, sending them to the open seas. And there are others doing the same thing. We are not the only ones. The Gulf people. I mean, we are almost export 10% only of oil to the world. But you in Russia and in other countries are exporting as much the rest of the 100%. So 10% when the market is gloating with oil is not that much, especially if we, as I said, had procedures to make it less of a problem.
It looks like the one who's in the best position if this situation continues, and you just mentioned that, is Russia. Russia is less reliant on the oil in the Persian Gulf, and it's able to get its oil kind of now at a premium to places like China and India. You have good relations, I understand, based on what I read from OPEC notes with Russia. Well, how would you characterize your relationship with Russia in a situation like this?
Very good. Very, very good. We saved the world many times in situation like this before. Our cooperation with Russia, the relationship, the friendly relationship between Putin and Prince Mohammed bin Salman helped that a lot. In this situation as well, I think our cooperation in OPEC Plus is helping stabilize the market to a great extent.
Let me ask you a tough question. This is in the news. I'm sure you know about it. I'm not surprising you. There are reports out there that the Aramco facility, the refinery, one of the biggest refineries in the world, I think it's something like 550,000 barrels a day that they refine, was recently hit. And there's a report out there that it was actually Israel who hit this facility that people are looking on camera right there, because they wanted to make it look like Iran hit it. Iran is saying and called your government officials and said, we didn't do this. We've hit a lot of places, but we didn't do this one. So what do you make of this controversy, this story that's floating around out there?
So from what I hear, it came from north, from Iraq, and from militias, Kata'ib, Hezbollah, that belongs to Iran. But Iran says we didn't get the orders. They acted on their own. The same thing with Hezbollah. They said we didn't get the orders for them to attack Israel. I don't believe that. I believe they are arms of Iran without orders, without arms, without help and support. They wouldn't do it.
What about
this is being under consideration, and it was announced officially that we are considering ways to deal with this.
What about the story out there that there are Mossad agents in your country and that those Mossad agents may have been involved in doing something like this because they want you to go to war with Iran? They want to goat you into going to war with Iran.
Well, I don't know. I heard it from one source only in America, but I didn't hear anything like that from Saudi Arabia or from any official sources.
Final question. How concerned are you that this thing will continue to spiral and perhaps even spiral out of control? I understand. I did a count the other day. I don't know where your count is. By my count, I have like 14 countries involved right now in this hellstorm in the Middle East, in this conflagration. How concerned are you that this thing is going to continue to spiral, that it's going to continue to escalate?
I don't think for long, because Iran in particular is running out of fuel for this. If you look at the missiles that is being shot, you will see a decrease to a dangerous level, to a very low dangerous level for them, of course. Besides, it's costing a lot, the American taxpayer. It's costing a lot, the Israelis. I know the Israelis would want this to continue a little bit because they want to distract us from what's happening in the Palestinian territories. Mm. The crimes against humanity is happening now in Gaza and al-Daffa al-Gharbiya and even in Lebanon. But it can't continue for long. I expect it to end in a few weeks.
Wow. Now, a conversation with you makes us all understand how complicated this situation is. So many players, so many things at play. And you are so smart and so kind to give your time to take us through this and give us the Saudi Arabian perspective. Khalid Batarfi, he's a wonderful professor at Faisal University who's taken time to take us through this explanation. Thank you, Professor. We very much appreciate it.
Most welcome, sir.
Thank you. All right, so remember earlier when we talked about how there are powerful people in the United States, powerful enough to be able to tell the president what to do? that believe in a unipolar world. In other words, the U.S. must rule the world, and nobody else gets to do that. Not the Chinese, certainly not the Russians. You know, that's not a secret. The question is, what does China do? What does Russia do? When you have people like Lindsey Graham saying crazy things, and you have people like, you know, Mike Pompeo, as you heard earlier, saying crazy things about how Russians and Chinese are not normal, decent people, that they're bad people. Well, you heard my conversation the other day with Victor Gao from China, right? And he said, essentially, China is on the side of Iran 100%. What about Russia? When we come back from the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Maria Zakharova. She is the spokeswoman for Russia's foreign ministry, one of the most respected and outspoken diplomats in this part of the world. I'm going to play that Mike Pompeo tape for her to have her react and hear what she has to say. We will be right back. Maria Zakharova is one of the most ardent defenders of the motherland that exists in Russia. She is one of the most respected diplomats as well, working, of course, at the Office of the Foreign Ministry, where for years she has, in fact, been the voice of the ministry in many ways to all parts of the world. And she really is a true defender of the Russian position. And that's why you hear oftentimes what she has to say, not just here, but in publications all over Europe and all over the United States. So here now, let me bring in that person, the person who is the official spokeswoman for the Foreign Ministry of Russia, Maria Zakharova. Madam Spokeswoman, it is so kind of you to join us. I can only imagine how busy your schedule is these days. So we really appreciate you taking time to take us through some of these questions that we want to ask you, especially in these difficult times. Let me begin with this. I want to start by sharing something with you. This is something that I saw the other day that kind of floored me. This is Mike Pompeo. He's the former CIA director of the United States. And here he is essentially explaining why the United States needed to attack Iran and essentially then telling the Iranian people why they need to take sides with the West and the United States. Here, take a listen to this.
We want the Iranian leadership to fall, and we want those who are in between trying to figure out which side to be on. Don't pick the Chinese. Don't pick the Russians. Don't pick the Ayatollah. Be with Western civilization, be decent, be a normal nation, and you too can live a wonderful life with your family and not suffer under Ayatollah as you have for so, so long.
Don't pick the Russians, don't pick the Chinese, pick decent, normal people. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I think that Epstein in America for 25 years was considered, what was the word? He was an upstanding citizen, normal person. Epstein was welcome in many houses in normal countries, like he said, like the United States, the UK, and many other countries, respectable countries, as he said. But then it turned out that he is a pervert, not just a criminal, but a pervert. So to say normal or respectable, when it comes from America, there could be many different meanings of that word. And for many years, it was the Western countries that used and implemented the idea of the new normal, of the new ethical approach. What new normal, like, does he mean? And to remind you, he was also, for a while, the head of the State Department. So now what he said correctly, what he said right, and he actually said something right. It was correct. He said, do not take sides. And then he just gave us a list. And I agree with him. Do not take anybody's side. You need to stick to the truth. And the truth is based on the facts and truthful information. So what is the truth? And he listed China, Russia, and Iran as countries that somehow are not normal. And where does he come from saying that? Why are our countries not normal at some point? For some reason, our countries are ancient civilizations. Our countries gave to this world so much as far as culture, science, academics, education, humanities. Our countries have never started global wars. Our countries during world wars were always on the side, on the right side, on the side of the good guys, like in World War II. Hitler attacked Russia from the west, whereas China was attacked by Japan from the east. Our country, Russia, back then it was the Soviet Union, we were fighting Hitler not just because we wanted to save ourselves, but we liberated the Western Europe from themselves because Hitler was the product of Western democracy. And then together with the Chinese, we finished off the Japanese in the East. And back then, the United States of America were with us, together with us. They were part of the anti-Hitler coalition. So what is wrong with us? Let's ask this question. So what country has China attacked in the last decades? Can you give me one example? Maybe Russia and China have invaded Iraq? No. Russia and China, and back then, France and some other countries were also with us on the same side. We actually tried to talk the UK and the United States out of attacking a sovereign state and destroying it. So maybe Russia and China and Iran were fooling the international community, talking about the fact that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. No, we didn't do that. It was the United States of America that did it. It was State Secretary, just like Pompeo, but his name was Colin Powell, and he was the one who brought that violence to the Security Council meeting. And he said that this is proof, this white substance, that this is part of the weapons of mass destruction. So do not say things that are not true. Russia, China, and Iran have not attacked anyone. Russia, for 7 years, has asked and proposed different solutions, diplomatic solutions in Ukraine. And it was France, Germany, and the rest of the Western, so-called Western coalition. They did everything within their power, and they actually admitted that. Merkel admitted that, who was the chancellor at the time, and the former president of France, Hollande, they admitted that they did everything so that under the fog screen of the Minsk agreements, they would militarize the Kyiv regime, and they would use the smoke screen of the talks. And then they also provoked the an open conflict. So we are on the right side of history. And I would also like to say about Iran. I do not represent Iran. My country, Russian, the Russian Federation, Russia is my country. But I would like to point out that our country, just like other countries, has been following and monitoring what Iran has been doing on its own territory with its nuclear program, peaceful nuclear program. We do that through the IAEA because this is the organization that has experts, and the organization sent monitoring experts to that area all the time. They didn't just go there to look around as tourists. They had the mandate to visit all the sites, all the nuclear sites inspect them, and file reports. At no point did that organization say that Iran violated something. I am speaking for the country that was party to the Iran nuclear program talks. Russia, China, and the EU.
So then when the United States, because this is important what you're saying to us, when you say, what, based on what you just said, when the United States says we had to attack Iran because they were actually enriching uranium to the point where they were very close to having a nuclear bomb, you're saying that's a lie.
I would like to reiterate, the United States signed that deal, that nuclear deal with Iran. This was a joint agreement. Certain countries were parties to that. It was verified by the Security Council. It was legalized through that structure. Just remember what the United States did. They just basically said later, after a couple of years, that for them, this agreement is not an agreement. They are not going to treat it as a deal. So at every point, at every stage, in respect of Iran and other countries, we see these lies when all kinds of pretenses are used to lie to the international community. They lied to the international community. France and Germany lied to the international community because they were part of the NATO club along with the USA. So they used the Minsk talks as a smokescreen. This is basically a covered operation, because in reality, they wanted to militarize the Kyiv regime, which they later sicked on Russia, and they provoked the major conflict in Europe. So again, they're doing the same thing, a smokescreen. They worked on that nuclear deal, and they then walked away from the nuclear deal. And that joint agreement actually had steps of how to walk away from the agreement, but the United States of America ignored that. They were the ones who signed the deal. The U.S. president actually signed that deal, and how sides could or parties could exit that deal. And we keep hearing that Iran is developing nuclear weapons, but we have the IAEA, which conducted inspections for many years at all the sites that were under the roof of the IAEA, and they never discovered any violations. They, like, you look at the reports.
There were
no reason to believe that there were nuclear weapons, but the accusations kept coming. So I'm just saying that in order to start a campaign like that, this aggressive attack on countries, the West, including the United States, always uses these false pretenses. But this time, they finally, in the last days, in the days leading up to the attack and during the attack, they actually showed their cards. And they they said that the true reason for the attack is the regime change.
Yeah, and you know what? I was speaking recently to Mr. Lavrov, and I was taken aback because he almost seemed personally affronted, almost, shall I say, angry about the fact that when he was meeting with Mr. Putin and Mr. Trump in Alaska, he felt like he had a deal, like there was an agreement, that there was some kind of coming together, if you will. And then several days later, it's like they never even talked. There was no deal. Now we have a situation where the United States is, so Russia's negotiating with the United States. The Iranians are negotiating with the United States. Then the United States actually assassinates the Supreme Leader and some of the very people that they were negotiating with in that meeting. This becomes a real big question of trust, not just for Iran, but I imagine for Russia itself, no?
I would not talk about trust now, because we have said many times that we will only trust practical, specific practical steps and acts and actions. So, of course, we are with every respect, we see that the White House has said many times that they want to see a peaceful settlement in Ukraine. But we've also emphasized that supplying Kyiv with weapons continues. So I think it is very important to go back to the, that quote from Pompeo. I don't know, does he have any official post right now? Does he hold any office? Maybe he's an advisor or something.
Yes.
But the interesting thing that he said, that become part of the Western civilization and you will live a wonderful life. What do they mean by the Western civilization? 165 girls were killed, like they were targeted at a school in one of the cities in Iran. And that mass murder is just horrifying, but we're also horrified by the reaction of the Western civilization to that mass murder. Have you heard anything from the Western civilization, any sympathy, any compassion? Have they expressed any of that? Or maybe just some formal words that must be said when something like that happens? Have you heard anything about their apologies? We have not heard anything from the Western civilization. Even whatever they said before, that this is collateral damage, we didn't even hear that. They didn't even mention collateral damage. There are no regrets, no sympathy. So is this the Western civilization? Tell me. Maybe the Western civilization is some unknown number. We haven't counted the victims of the Iraq reckless campaign when the whole coalition killed a lot of civilians, and we still don't know the number. But it was probably a million of just civilian casualties. We are not talking about troops right now. We're not talking about servicemen. We're not even talking about officials, just civilians. And some reports, some numbers tell us that it's about a million or maybe even more. So that's your Western civilization. What is it then? Bombing Belgrade in 1999, bombing civilians, the residents of that city, or maybe overthrowing Gaddafi when he was just basically torn to pieces and the White House applauded to how the legitimate leader of a state was killed by a crazy mob. Is this the Western civilization? What is the Western civilization? Is this basically doing transgender surgeries on children when boys are told that they can be so some neutral gender, or maybe when girls are not allowed to be girls and they are also some kind of neutral gender? Is this Western civilization? Or maybe Western civilization when you issue a passport to a person and it says some gender X in your passport? Or maybe like in Paris, in France, when it was announced that a family is parent one and parent two. So basically, they couldn't even use the word mother and father. Is this Western civilization?
I get your point.
It's like credits, like always being in debt, always taking out credits, because we're looking at the statistics. The country is basically, the United States is can claim bankruptcy because their debt is just unbelievable.
You almost sound to me, Madam Spokeswoman, it almost sounds to me like you're bothered. And who can blame you? You're a Russian. Russians are a very proud people with a very long civilization and history. And to be told by the former CIA director of the United States, a man who once said part of his job is to lie, cheat, and steal, that you and your country is not decent or normal, I can understand why you're so why this would anger you. I mean, it would be perfectly normal for someone not to be angered, even someone in your esteemed position. I need to ask you about something else that's now happened. There's another breaking story we're following where the United States military has just used a submarine to sink an Iranian ship, but it was off the coast of Sri Lanka, some 2,000 miles away from the fighting. If this is a war, is that fair? The Iranians are very angry and have now sunk a U.S. tanker, apparently, according to reports, in the just outside the Strait of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf. What do you make of that?
I don't know this information about... I don't have this information about submarines. I can't comment because I haven't seen the reports about the submarine. We qualified. We are saying that it's an aggression, that the U.S. and Israeli aggression against a sovereign state. And it was unprovoked, 100% unprovoked. And I am not being emotional right now. I'm saying these things not out of my emotions. These are just facts. These are not emotions. These are facts. Yes, I am articulating them. Yes, I guess I want to make sure that everybody understands this. Of course, people around the world, they have feelings about that because they are looking at what's happening, and it's chaos. It's just violation of everything, of all sorts of orders. When Russia and China were accused, or that they said that we're not normal or not decent, it's not. It's criminal to say something like that about us.
Yeah.
What is this? Nazi ideology, racism?
Americans.
China.
Americans right now are trying to figure, you know, I'm American, obviously, and I talk to everybody in America all the time. And I think Americans are really tussling right now. The polls in America say Americans are angry that their government has done this. 70% of Americans, if not more, were against any kind of action against Iran. And even now, after this, they're still angry about it. It seems to me like the American government is doing this not at the behest of the American people. So why are they doing it?
I would like to say,
the thinking is it's for Israel.
I don't really care what Americans think about the actions of their own government. That's their thing. But I do care about what they say about my country. And my country has suffered from the Western civilization. We're attacked by France, and Napoleon was here in Moscow, which was burned to the ground because of him. We were attacked by Germany that burned people, and 27 million Soviet citizens were killed in that war. And on April 19th, we will mark the day of genocide of the Soviet people because so many people were killed by Nazi Germany, and I will defend my country. In every conversation, in every argument, when somebody will quote the statements that claim that my country is not normal, is not decent, we've been told that before. It was said to us 85 years ago. Hitler's plan included killing Russians and Eastern Slavic people, and we saw that unfold through gas chambers, mass shootings, towns and cities and villages that were burned down. We were communicated that idea that we're not normal. China, during World War II, also received the same message from Japan. You are somehow not normal. We defended our right to live, to work, and the interesting thing is we forgave everyone. And China, for many decades, basically serviced this Western civilization. Whatever America has, the phones, computers, laptops, any manufacturing clothes and shoes, look where it was manufactured. And after that, your American speakers can say those things about our countries. No, that's not going to work. Our countries are peaceful, and we did not fight to get other countries' territories. We were fighting for our own countries, for our own territories, and our right to live the way we want to live. And we also helped other peoples who were oppressed for centuries. And my country fought for the right of the African people to be independent after the colonial oppression that lasted centuries. And no Pompeo has the right to say things like that about our country, about my country. They cannot humiliate China. They must not do that, because China is also a permanent member of the Security Council. And just like Russia, we never manipulated, we never lied to the international community. It was the United States that they got caught in their lies many times.
Let's finish with the situation at hand, which is obviously Iran. Look, it looks to me and to most people like this situation is starting to spiral out of control. The United States and the president seem to want a very focused, short war. It's looking like anything but a short war. There's at least 14 or 15 different countries now involved. How concerned is Russia about the possibility of this war continuing and escalating beyond the borders that it's in now? And what can and will Russia do to try and prevent this from happening?
Russia did not get concerned about this just now. Russia has been concerned about the actions of Western coalitions and that Western minority. We have been concerned about that for many years. We always called on international law as the foundation for international relations. We've always stressed that the UN is at the center of it all, because it gives us a platform to solve all issues through legal and diplomatic mechanisms. But now, these countries, Israel and the United States of America, they are not even hiding that their goal is not even to protect their interests in, like, their security interests, but just simply a regime change. They want to control another country, and they are outright saying that. So they're basically saying that other countries don't have the right, despite the fact that they've been around for thousands of years, they say that they don't have a right to sovereignty and independence.
I'm wondering if at this point there is any possibility that these two sides will be able to come together and have some kind of conversation before this escalates. As you know, there's talk now that some of the Gulf states may be firing back at Iran. If they enter the fray, this thing might spiral out of control. What would you say? You're one of the most respected diplomats in the world. What would you say to these sides about them maybe coming together and trying to figure this out?
That's why Russia is staying in close communication and maintaining its contacts with the Middle Eastern colleagues. Our president has had communication with his colleagues. Our foreign minister is also in close communication with his colleagues from different countries in the region, and also the colleagues from China. Our diplomats are working at international platforms. Our goal is very clear. We base our approach on facts and clear analysis, and we are pretty good at doing that. We had an idea how this was going to develop, and even before anything started. And we said from the very beginning, only diplomacy, because otherwise the escalation is going to be terrible. Self-destruction is inevitable. And unfortunately, we were right. We would like to be wrong in this situation. We would have liked to be wrong in this situation, but we are not wrong. So we think that there needs to be a ceasefire from all sides, and we need to start a fundamental diplomatic work based on international law, understanding that there are sovereign states and they have their own national interests, and changing regimes are not in agreement with international law and also against the internal, like the legal systems of the countries that are doing this right now. And it's also against just common sense.
Maria Zakharova, she is the voice of the Russian Foreign Ministry, one of the most respected and sought-after diplomats in situations like this. We are so grateful, Madam Spokeswoman, that you've given us this time, and we appreciate your words and, as usual, your wisdom. Thank you very much. There you have it. Mike Pompeo says Russians are not decent and not normal. Neither are Chinese, and I'm sure he'll see this response from the Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman, and to say that he might get an earful would be an understatement. Now to what you are saying, and this show, or parts of it, are now being seen or being shared by people on social media, and the numbers are in the tens of millions. We're humbled by the response, and we want to share some of your comments so you can be an active part of this newscast, right? Regarding our debate with Professor Mostafa from Tehran and the U.S. Attorney Michael Wynn, you have lots to say about that debate. It got a little heated. Radar level up, says Professor Mostafa. You are a world hero. Thank you, and stay safe, my friend. Almira Munir says, Mr. Attorney, speaking about arms in Iran, forgets that USA has 800 military bases all over the globe. E-Space says, oh, wait, E-Splace, whatever. Guest, great guests, he writes. What is quite heartening is the support for Iran and the lack of support for America that is growing within allied countries. Rainmaker R says, as soon as Attorney Wynn saw the Iranian professor, his face changed. The narrative changed. That's pure racism. Bronco says, extremely interesting exchange here. Shows how disconnected the United States and its military actions are from reality. The U.S. lost as soon as its bloodlust to kill the late Ayatollah took over. Mashoki says, and the audacity of Americans to do this during Ramadan is absolutely insane. We thank you for your comments very much. As usual, we appreciate all the feedback that you share with us. Check out my pages, and you'll be able to comment as well, and maybe we'll use something that you have to say. My assistant, Marie, is over there diligently waiting to see what you have to say so then she can share it with me, and then I can share it with you. She goes through some of the comments, interestingly enough. So on YouTube, I'm Journalistically Speaking, and on X, I'm Sanchez TV. On BitChute, I'm also Sanchez TV, and you can now find us on Spotify as well. We're all over the place. But most importantly, we're in your living room, or in your phone, or on your computer. Thank you for letting us in, and thank you for letting us be a part of your news menu. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you again soon.